Talking with David Riddell, Dave Riddell, who is the DNR's bat ecologist. Dave, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you are. Thank you.
First of all, I wanted to talk about, lay the groundwork on white nose syndrome, which we began discussing here in Wisconsin last year. Give us the thumbnail on white nose.
White nose was discovered in New York back in 2007. And was found, no one had seen anything like it before, with white fungus on the nose, which gave it its name, and quickly spread to the surrounding states in New York, and was noticeable declines in bats, with dead bats out on the landscape or near the cave entrance 2-3 months before they were scheduled to leave. So it was too cold, abnormal behavior, flying during the daytime, and mass mortality, devastating. It has since spread to 18 states, coming from the northeast, spreading down all the way to Alabama, as furthest south, went up to 4 Canadian provinces. So it's coming, for Wisconsin's sake, it's coming from both the north and the south. This year they confirmed the disease in Missouri, right along the Mississippi River.
Do we know what exactly it is that's killing the bats? In other words, is it the fungus itself, or the fact that they're getting out and active before they should and aren't finding food sources?
Well, we just did an experiment here in Wisconsin at the National Wildlife Health Center and determined that the fungus is the actual cause of the disease. It's not a secondary effect. And it's likely that the fungus, when it invades the wing tissue, interrupts physiological processes, making the bats arouse more frequently during winter. Every time a bat arouses, it burns up approximately 1 month worth of hibernation fat. So if bats wake up too often, they will run low on reserves, and basically their physiological clock is telling them, I'm out of fat, or it's running low. I need to either move to a colder location to try and preserve my remaining reserves, or head outside and look for insects that apparently, or unfortunately, aren't available at that
aren't
time.
Aren't there yet, sure. Yes. You mentioned it originated in New York State. Do we know prior to that what's the origin of this?
Well, it's almost certain that it came from Europe. They have since found the disease in Europe. They didn't even know they had it. They don't have a lot of bats there to begin with, so they don't notice large mortality events like when we've got a site in New York that's got 100,000 little brown bats and 99% of them are dead on the floor, and you can't step anywhere without stepping on bats stacked 10 high dead.
Mm-hmm. And what sorts of mortalities now have we seen here in Wisconsin now that it's established itself here?
We have conducted our surveillance here in Wisconsin for the past 2 years. We're finishing up this year. Last year we did not find it, and this year we're finishing up our surveillance season to determine if it arrived this year. So we'll be compiling all of our data and determining whether we're clean this year or not.
I'm sorry, so we have been clean thus far in Wisconsin?
Last year we were considered clean. We checked every site underground where bats could and do hibernate, and you know, anywhere from a 10-bat hibernaculum up to 150,000 hibernaculums. So we did the entire range of sites. In terms of what we've done compared to some other sites is we've looked at every site underground, which is relatively easy for Wisconsin rather than a site like Missouri that's got 6,000 caves to look at.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, so far we haven't found it here in Wisconsin.
All I can say is last year we didn't.
Okay, last year we didn't.
And this year, once we finish up, we're finishing up soon and should be putting out a press release with our final conclusions for this year.
Okay. As with So many of these sorts of environmental problems, though, I mean, would it, for emerald ash borer, that sort of thing, would it be safe to assume that it's a case of if or when rather than if we'll see it here in Wisconsin?
That is our expectation, is it's not if, it's more likely when. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have been surprised if it showed up last year. We're very close. Bats move. Our largest numbers of bats are the little brown bats, and they can move up to 280 miles, moving from summer grounds to winter hibernation sites. That puts us in range from the Ontario site, mm-hmm. right along Lake Superior, as well as some other sites like Indiana and Missouri.
Sure. Let's talk about why this should be a concern for people. And I want to focus on, first of all, the beneficial aspects of these animals that people may not be aware of or may not think about.
Yes, absolutely. They are extremely important. And most people don't realize it because they're inside at night and they never see the bats flying. And there's very little information or education events like you're doing right now to get the word out. A recent study last fall came out, and they did an economic assessment on the value of bats to eating insect pests for agriculture. They found in the United States anywhere from $3 billion to $54 billion per year in just insect eating services alone for agriculture. In Wisconsin alone, they found up to, depending on the number of pests per year, anywhere from $658 million up to $1.5 billion per year insect services from bats in Wisconsin. That's not taking into effect the other environmental problems such as increased pesticide use and how that affects water quality, and it did not address forestry, which, as you know, there's a lot of insect pests with forest products as well.
Mm-hmm. So a significant, if we were to project long term, a significant decrease in bats in Wisconsin, or anywhere else for that matter, I mean, could lead to an increase in the sorts of pests that can lead to crop destruction, forestry destruction.
Absolutely, and I think we won't know the true effects until all of this plays out. We've already lost, the latest estimate is we've already lost approximately 6 million bats in the Northeast, and they are predicting a 99% chance of regional extinction within the next 14 years.
Hmm. Lastly, talking about research and possible ways to combat this, what are we seeing? I'm guessing that the outlook isn't optimistic, but what are we seeing at this point?
We've got every person available in all disease aspects, bat biologists, mycologists, everyone that can study it is looking at researching the causes, as well as environmental conditions and possible treatments. The difficulty with fungicides is we can't spray stuff like that in caves because of the sensitive systems that they already harbor. Some species exist only in a single cave, and we can't risk that. However, we can look at possible drastic measures in underground mines that don't have and support healthy ecosystems. Some of the treatments, there's been a few experiments, some non-chemical, persistent, you know, natural experiments that kill the fungus but still need to be tested on the bats as well as in the field. They have found sort of a ray of hope, as there's a few survivors out in the Northeast that they found that had visited infected sites and survived through the winter and arrived at their summer colonies. We're not giving up, and there is a lot of information that people are putting together in a very short amount of time. We don't have a lot of time here.
Right, right. What should the public think about this? What can people do if they're interested in helping?
There's very little awareness building. If people understand the drastic nature, this has never been experienced before in any mammal in North America. It's very devastating. People can help in a number of ways. Raise awareness, educate their neighbors and friends. They can get involved if they want to help Wisconsin. We've got two projects that they can get involved with. Acoustic monitoring or bat detectors. They can go out in the landscape and help us survey where the bats are, where we need to focus our conservation efforts, as well as if they've got bat houses, they can help us monitor those to look at the health. The third thing, and probably most important, is non-game species do not get funding from licensed sources, so they're typically way underfunded. We've got a conservation endowment set up through the Natural Resources Foundation for supporting bat conservation in Wisconsin in perpetuity. So people can donate to that, and that's a great help in allowing us to actually fight the disease. So those three things I would encourage people to strongly consider, because we're looking at multiple species decline and possible extinction.
And how many species are there in Wisconsin?
There are eight. Mm-hmm. Generally, we say there's seven, but very few people have been studying bats in Wisconsin, and there's anywhere from seven to nine. We're still looking for the last two.
Sure. And could you give and I realize it's probably difficult to do a count, but could you give a ballpark number as to how many total bats we might have within the state?
Well, I can tell you our most common bat, the little brown bat, which people recognize from in their house or attic or bat house. We've got approximately 300,000 of little brown bats hibernating in Wisconsin. That puts us at one of the largest numbers in the Midwest. So we stand and we're providing service. Let's take the example of a hibernation site the size of 10 houses or some relatively small area where you harbor 100,000 bats. If that site gets lost, that affects the surrounding landscape of thousands of square miles. So it's not losing a small pocket. You're losing a large natural resource on a very large area.
Two other things that I wanted to talk about in terms of them eating insects. Mosquitoes?
There are some bats that will eat mosquitoes, and that's what humans appreciate, but that's not all they eat, and they even change their diet different parts of the year, and a lot of crop pests.
Sure.
And that's not all they eat. The amazing thing of these little animals is a female during birthing and lactation, feeding the young, can eat her entire body weight per night in insects. That's amazing. And think about that in terms of humans. A 200-pound person like myself would have to eat 800 quarter-pound cheeseburgers in a single night. So, and males can eat up to half their body weight. So they're doing a great service, a lot of insects. And people, for example, down at Yellowstone State Park, southwest Wisconsin has about 4,000 bats in bat houses there, and I constantly hear from people visiting the site that they don't get mosquito bites there. So it's people should really wake up and understand the importance of these animals right now.
And then one other thing, and that is, I think, an issue of concern for some people is bats as vectors of rabies. Now, it's always been my assumption that bats as carriers of rabies has somewhat been overstated when we compare them to some other mammals like skunks, for example. Where do they fall in on the spectrum, if you will?
Well, bats are not carrier of rabies. That carrier implies that they carry the disease and don't die from it, and they spread it. Bats do succumb to the disease, and it's in the wild population estimated that less than 0.5% ever contract the disease. They do not generally attack like you would be worried if they're flying around your house. The general rule of thumb is if you see a bat behaving strangely on the ground, flying during the day, do not pick it up with bare hands, obviously, and actually you should never pick up a wild animal. In terms of skunks, raccoons, foxes, I believe skunks have a higher incident rate. However, they've got less interaction with humans. So there are a very low number, but across the United States, a number of bat-human interactions that, if not dealt with by your doctor, it's a fatal disease.
I'm sure. Dave, I've got enough to go with here. Anything in closing? I mean, just maybe your closing thoughts on the issue and where you see things going with bats in Wisconsin.
We've got a team in our bat program at Wisconsin DNR we're putting in a lot of hours. We recognize this is the final hour. We've got to address the situation, prepare for it, and be tuned in with the national efforts to come up with treatment experiments and cooperating with everyone involved. I think what would be beneficial to your listeners would be to understand that they can experience bats up close and personal at our annual Bat Fest here in Madison at Warner Park, May 12th. It's a Saturday before Mother's Day, and remember, bats are mothers too, and they can see live bats from around the world. Different continents. They can see the Malayan flying fox with 6-foot wingspan, vampire bats, Wisconsin bats, large numbers of fruit bats with some guests that we are inviting. And it was very successful last year. We had to move to a bigger venue this year. And nothing but positive comments. People bring their kids. It's a family-friendly event, and I think well worth people taking the time to visit and learn more about the importance of bats.
Excellent. Dave Riddell is bat ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you for having me.